Casper and the Sheep.
Casper and the Sheep.
Casper chewing the PlayStation box, etc., etc.
He's a naughty, naughty boy.
Are you crazy about Chihuahuas? Maybe you're wondering if a Chihuahua is the right dog for you. Perhaps you have a training or a behavior struggle. Well, look no further. Here you will find expert opinions, honest views, training and behavior advice, and much more on the Chihuahua Podcast. And now, allow me to welcome your hosts, Kate Masterton and Haley Miles. Over to you, ladies.
Welcome back to this week's episode of the Chihuahua Podcast. I'm Kate Masterton and I'm here with my co-host, Haley Miles.
Hello. Hello, everybody. Hello.
So, before we get into it, how has your week been?
My week's been really good. A lot of clients at the moment. Seeing a lot of clients. Yeah, everyone's getting really nice results, and we're working a lot on focus and engagement at the moment. Working That's a lot good. With Chihuahuas with focus and engagement, because they struggle in an outside environment, so they struggle with barking at dogs and stuff like that. So we're working a lot on focus games, and they're all really happy and they're all really getting lovely results.
Yay. And I would like to say to our listeners and everybody that you're all doing a fantastic job, because I feel like we don't say it enough, do we? Like, and for me personally, I'm very quick to say, oh, I'm rubbish, I may as well stop trying. The reason I'm mentioning this is I've had a couple of people message me this week to say thank you for motivating them, and it really means a lot. So I just think it's really, you know, give yourselves a pat on the back, and wherever you are with your dogs and your dog training journey, that you're doing a really good job.
Yeah,
that means absolutely. You too, Hayley. We're all doing
thank
a good
you.
Job.
We're all doing the best that we can do with our dogs at the time.
Exactly.
So how's your week been?
So I have been doing the Do More With Your Dog trick titles with my guys. So I've got Chloe to Advanced.
Ooh,
she's now an advanced amazing. Trick dog.
I've
also
incredible.
Roped in some friends and listeners. You're also one of the people I've roped in.
Yes.
So a couple of us, we've been working on our Do More With Our Dog tricks. And I would like to give a shout out to our trick evaluator, Jules Boyd of Animal Tactics, because she's been doing our evaluations. So thank you for scoring our tricks. We really appreciate it.
Can you explain a little bit about what Do More With Your Dog is, because the listeners might want more information?
Yes, I can. So Do More With Your Dog, it's a really good way to do more with your dog. You video what is it's good if you feel like you've got a bit stuck, like, oh, I've taught recall, what can I do now? You can do it in the comfort of your own home. Basically, there's a trictionary, which is a dictionary full of tricks. I think there's over 250 in there. They start off really easy. So you've got novice, and then you've got expert, which is what we're working on. Expert involves things like putting hoops on a cone, ring toss. And novice starts off with things like spin, sit, down. But it's good because it gives you some structure, gives you something to work on, gives you a goal. If you feel like you've got a bit stuck, need some motivation and a bit of validation, submit the videos and they get scored and you get told you're doing a great job.
It's something that I need to get involved with Bo more, because she loves tricks even. She loves tricks, and she knows quite a few tricks. But I think it would really help if I had it, like, you know, like you, really help to get like a goal in place and like go for this particular thing and get these tricks done and go for that particular thing, just because it's motivational, really. And there's other people doing it.
Yeah, there's like a group of us as well. So we're all like, oh, what are you doing?
I'm bit doing of competition.
You know, a bit of competition. I've been amazing. Overtaken.
Yes, you have. You have. Not by me. Not by me. Yeah.
But yeah, it's good. Bit of healthy competition, bit of motivation. Doing something with your dog, and also trick. Well, it's all a trick, really, isn't it? Everything we do with our dogs, it's all a trick.
Yeah. Training should be, learning should be fun. Learning should be interesting for the dog and enjoyable. So, sounds good.
And it teaches our dogs to learn. They learn to learn, don't they?
Yes, this is the thing. They teaching tricks. People think that teaching tricks is just like, well, it's just why am I teaching a trick? But like Kate said, it teaches dogs to learn how to do other stuff.
It teaches the dog as well that their behavior can have consequences.
That's what I was going to say.
Consequences, so they can, it makes them think, oh, what can I do now to make this person give me a cookie?
Yeah, and it's really bonding as well, isn't it? If you're teaching tricks, yeah, or teaching anything really, you're building on your relationship with your dog. You're communicating with each other.
Yep, and it's confidence building as well for both the handler and the dog.
Especially things like peekaboo or middle, when the dog has to go between your legs and underneath you, and you know, and it builds that trust, doesn't it?
It does, yeah. I've definitely seen an improvement the more that I've been doing mine, their confidence. Well, you've seen Casper on the seesaw.
Oh my God, yeah. That's amazing.
Because we've been working on a lot of uneven surfaces. Now he just gets on anything that wobbles. It's like, yeah, look at me go. That's really amazing. Brave.
And he's at that age where this will really help him going forward, wouldn't it? So this week we are going to talk to you about how to set rules and boundaries inside the house and probably outside the house with your Chihuahua.
So when we started talking about this topic, both of us were like, I don't feel like my dog really has any rules, didn't we? Because
feral they are.
Yeah, they're just feral and do what they like, which is not true. They do have rules, but it's the way that we enforce that. They don't have rules in the sense that we're like, don't do this, don't do that. It's very, you know, we're not constantly telling them what they shouldn't be doing. So they do have rules. I don't know where I'm trying to go with this.
No, I agree. When we were sort of discussing this episode, we were both thinking, should we discuss it? Because we didn't, but we don't, our dogs don't have rules, but actually they do. But yeah, we set them with kindness and fairness.
Yeah.
They definitely do have rules. Because I thought, my God, when I thought about it, I thought, my dog's wild, you know, but actually, because we're not strict with our dogs, we're not. You know, we use positive reinforcement, we use kind, ethical methods. But in fact, when we got talking about this, there's a lot of rules that we set in place, isn't there?
Yeah, there is. But yeah, when we first started, we're like, well, I don't think they really have any rules. But as you just said, when we thought about it, they do actually have lots of rules that they just live by. But because of the way that we have built the behaviours that we want, we're not going around constantly telling them off for breaking the rules.
No. The main thing that a lot of owners, well, as trainers, let's just put it this way. As trainers, we can see things that are maybe going to go wrong in the future. We're always a kind of 10 to 20 seconds ahead, aren't we? Maybe 10 seconds ahead with our dogs. So we do set the environment up to help our dogs be successful and not get anything wrong in the first place. But then we also teach an alternative behavior, and we're going to go through a little bit about this in this episode and how you can set rules and boundaries with fairness, with kindness, and not nagging at your Chihuahua all the time and telling them off.
The step-by-step guide of how to set house rules. And also, it depends, your house rules are your house rules. It's whatever is happy situation for you, isn't it? We're not going to tell you what your house rules are, because they'll vary depending on different people and different circumstances.
So should we give a couple of examples? We'll come back to examples later, but should we give a couple of just to kind of let people know what we mean by our rules?
Yeah, my dogs are currently doing a very good example of my house rules.
What's that?
When I'm doing this, or when I'm on the phone or doing something else that doesn't involve them, I want them all to go and sit in their beds and not bother me. And that's what they're all doing. So, yay, go team.
See, that's a rule, but it's did you ask them to go in the beds, or do they just naturally just go to the beds?
Generally, they will just, if I'm doing something else that's not involving them, they generally will just go to their bed. To tell Maisie to go to her bed, because she was like, well, maybe it should be attention on me. And I was like, yeah, it's definitely go to bedtime.
And I would think that they've probably had their needs met before you do that.
Yes, they have. So they've had some training this morning, they've been for a walk, they've been fed, you know, they've had all their needs met and now I just need some quiet time.
Yeah, talking to me about
to you about the rules.
About them.
Yeah.
So we wouldn't expect a dog or your chihuahua to go and settle in its bed. It's unrealistic to think it's going to go and settle in its bed when it hasn't been for a walk, it's not being fed, it's not had its needs met for the day. So that's really important. But just to give you an example for me, my two, when I'm feeding them, I mean, how many of you, have a think about it, how many of you have chihuahuas that bark and jump at the counter and, you know, create a scene when you're preparing their dinner? For me, I did get a little bit of that in the past, but I don't like it. When I'm preparing the dinner, I don't want the barking. I don't want them to be jumping up at the counter. And because I've got two dogs, if they get excited, they might fight. If they're hungry and excited, they might have a fight. So it was in their best interest and actually for my sanity to teach them an alternative behavior, which is, can you go and sit on your mat, please? So one's over here, one's over the other side of the room. They're sitting on the mat nicely. They're waiting and they know that they're going to get their dinner. If they sit nicely, they're going to get their dinner quicker. Okay. Exactly. So that's an example of setting the environment up or setting them up for success. If I could speak today, and then teaching them what I do want them to do while I'm doing this other thing. And we've got lots of examples like that, haven't we?
Part of setting rules and boundaries for the dogs, isn't it, is that you actually teach them what it is that you want them to be doing, rather than taking the approach of telling them off every time they do something that you don't want them to be doing. Have you actually taught them what it is they're supposed to do at this moment? Because it's all very well just shouting no at them, but if you've not taught them what it is you actually want, what are they supposed to do?
If I was going to say, you know, shut up, stop it, be quiet, no, and not ask them to do what I want them to do, guess what's going to happen? They're going to get frustrated. I'm hungry, please give me my food. Yes, I know, but you know, they're going to get frustrated. It's going to probably cause a fight. It's not ethical and it's not really nice for them, and you get frustrated as well. If you teach them something really useful, to go on their mat and wait, it's just a lot calmer, isn't it? And it's nicer for them.
Exactly. Yeah. So be looking at what you want them to be doing, not what you don't want them to be doing.
Always look for the good, really. A lot of people, they don't know. I mean, I talk to a lot of clients and my clients are great. But in the early days, when I'm working with a client, there are some behaviors that I can see that can be rewarded, but the client doesn't see it because all they're looking at is the wrong behavior, is the bad behavior, is the naughty behavior. Where in fact, if you rewarded the good behavior, the wanted behavior, that would happen more.
It's a human trait, isn't it? We're very quick to criticize. Generally, we're very quick to write a bad review, but we're not always quick to write a good review.
No, I always tend to look for the bad things. Not always, but and also, you know, telling your dog off or punishing your dog, it feels good for us in a way as well. It's quite reinforcing for the punisher, for the person doing the telling off. It kind of relieves that frustration. You know, it's not good for the dog. It just feels good for that person. But I think we have to rein back and actually think, what do I want my dog to do instead?
Like what I was saying about people earlier, motivating, telling the people that they're doing a good job. We should be doing that with our dogs. We should be telling our dogs when they are doing a good job, because that's going to make them feel better as well, rather than just telling them that they got it wrong all the time. Which is not going to help their confidence, because we should, especially with small dogs, we need to be building them up, not bringing them down.
Yes. Do you want to talk about the study that you were talking to me the other day about?
The main result of a 2010 study by Christine Erhant concluded that there was a correlation between increased fear and anxiety when punishment was used in smaller dogs, but not necessarily in bigger dogs. So smaller dogs are more sensitive to punishment than bigger dogs. We're not advocating it in any dog,
but that's interesting. And it does make sense.
But it does make sense, because they are Well, they're small, tiny dogs, and they're already on the lookout for things that might step on them.
Yeah, this is true. And you've got to think about body language as well. As a smaller dog, is you're going to be bending over more to a, you know, you're going to be kind of, your body language is going to be sort of more looming over a smaller dog. They're going to feel more intimidated in general. They're just going to be more sensitive, aren't they? And more, feeling more vulnerable as it is without the punishment.
Exactly. And we're probably actually more intimidating to smaller dogs just because of their size. Even if we don't mean to be, we could be more intimidating just tiny dogs than to bigger dogs anyway. Makes sense.
So, okay, how do we set, how do we start this? How do we start setting house rules and boundaries with fairness, with ethical, you know, with more ethical kind of methods, without shouting, telling off, all that sort of stuff? We've got kind of like a little, a three-pointer thing here, haven't we?
Yeah.
So the first thing we need to make sure is the behavior that we don't want, can it be prevented in the first place? Can it be prevented? And us trainers call that control and management, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Control and management is anything, usually anything kind of physical that you can put into play that prevents the behavior happening. For example, baby gates. If your dog's going to rush to the door when the postman comes, putting a baby gate between the lounge and the hall is going to stop that. It's a no-brainer. Can you think of anything else? There's loads of things.
I can.
Putting a lead on, to stop your dog running off to other dogs. You can put a lead on. Loads of physical stuff that you can do. Loads of prevention.
Yeah, there is. But what I wanted to say about that prevention is the reason that we prevent behavior is because the more the dog practices a behavior, the better and stronger that behavior becomes. The same with people.
Oh,
as well.
Yes.
So it's more the brain to say, oh, this is a good behavior, I'm going to do that again. The more they practice it, the better they get at it. So for things we don't want, prevention is better than cure, isn't it, in a lot of ways?
Yeah, absolutely. I talk to clients about this every single day. If you don't want a behavior to get worse, then don't let your chihuahua practice that behavior.
No.
Practice makes permanent, is the saying.
Yes, exactly.
Practice makes permanent. Don't let your dog practice that behavior. Because in some cases it feels quite good to do. Some chihuahuas might like to rush towards the door. When the postman comes or the delivery driver's there, it feels quite good. It's quite exciting.
Yeah. Yeah. So they'll do it because it's a really fun activity to do.
Yeah.
Like Casper and the sheep.
Casper and the sheep. Give me an example of that.
Yeah. Casper and the sheep. Oh, I think we've cracked it now. So we've got new sheep at the boundary of our gardens, and they can stick their heads through and the dogs can see them. The older two are fine about it, but Casper, he was like, oh my God, this is the best thing ever. He charges the sheep and then they charge him back and then he charges them. And it's become like a game. It's a very exciting game. So what I've done now is before I let him out is I've put like a breaker of treats in between the sheep and the front door. So now when he runs out, puts his nose out. He's like, yes, there's food here. Wow.
I love that idea.
Yeah, so now when he does it, he charges out, stops halfway to check for food, which they usually is.
Yeah, I love that idea. It's like a food scent barrier, like a breaker to stop him in his tracks.
Yeah, it's a breaker. Yeah.
And you know what? Interrupt the behaviour, absolutely. Yeah. And he doesn't know that you've put that there, does he?
No.
He just thinks, oh my God, now there's just a line of treats there. Oh my God.
Yeah.
I actually did that with a client once. The dog, it's quite a large garden, and the dog, when she let the dog out, the dog would rush right down to the gate and start barking, very similar to what Casper was doing with the sheep. And so we found a place to put treats. That method actually helped as well. So let the dog out, and immediately she went towards the gate, but then stopped in her tracks and was like, oh my God, this is hot dog. Why is hot dog here? I don't care. I'm going to eat it anyway. And then over time, she would just stop, and it would just stop that kind of because it was kind of replaced with another nice behavior. It was equally probably as exciting.
Yeah, that he's still getting to charge out the front door, which is he loves doing.
So it is equally exciting.
Yeah.
But the poor sheep don't get barked at now.
I'm not too sure they're poor sheep, though, because they come and chase him back, and then they stick their head through the fence and like, come on then, let's go.
Now you need to find a way of, yeah. The sheep probably enjoy it just as much. Yeah, training the sheep.
Yeah.
I reckon there's probably going to be quite, I mean, I bet there's lots of listeners here, right, that have that same issue. You let your chihuahuas out and they go charging out, barking the garden. They go to the gate and they're barking. I reckon there's probably going to be quite a few people now lacing their gardens with treats, their garden with treats to stop that. So eventually, with something like that, you'd let them out the garden. And if that was practiced a lot, let them out the garden, they would immediately go to that spot or just go in, you know, head into the garden and put their nose down and start sniffing for treats. Like, oh, is there treats here today? And as we've spoken about before, sniffing reduces arousal levels. So it's a no-brainer, really. And it calms your dog down. And then they can go and do their toilet and business and whatever else they need to do and come back in. So the next thing, so we've got prevention, control and management. Let's prevent it happening in the first place. Let's look at things that we can do there. The next thing is redirecting or interrupting the behavior when it's actually happening. Now, if it does, the behavior is happening, how do we stop? With fairness, with kindness, how do we stop our chihuahuas doing that thing?
What I do, if they're doing something that I don't want them to be doing, what I will do is I'll interrupt the behavior. I'll do that by saying their names. Now, I have conditioned them to, their names mean look at me. So it's not like me shouting no at them. I'll say their names and they'll look at me. And then more often than not, they get rewarded for looking at me. It depends on the situation. But I'll ask them to look at me and then I'll ask them to go and do something else. What about you? What do you do with yours?
That's what I do as well. I will say their name. And like Kate, we've played the name game a lot, which is where they hear the name, they get a piece of food, hear the name, get a piece of food. So they associate, like this is when they were younger. So they associate their names with something good. So they give me attention. The other thing I will probably do is I will ask for, I'll just call them, I expect, just to do like, you know, recall them away. Depends what they're doing. Yeah. And then I will give them something else to do or teach them or sort of ask them to do an alternative behavior. So I'll sort of say nicely, excuse me, what are you doing there? Can you come over here and do this other thing instead, please? In that sort of way. So, for example, if Bo's, whatever she's doing, be Bo, she looks at me and I'll ask her to touch my hand. So touch, and she'll touch my hand or on your mat or whatever else it may be, or, you know, come this way. That's what I do.
Why is that different? Why is this way different to if I just shouted no at them?
A lot of people will use startle in their the way that they sort of deal with their dogs. So they'll startle the dog. Oi! And they'll clap their hands and the dog will startle. I go, oh, what do you want? And they'll tell the dog off. Or they'll squirt water or they'll bang something to stop the behavior. Now, what can happen is that there can be side effects from doing that, or fallout, as we call it. And there was a study, and this kind of comes from a study that was done in 1920 by two scientists called Watson and Rayner. And it's a very, very well-known study. It's called the Little Albert Experiment. Little baby Albert.
Did not have a nice time.
No, he didn't have a nice time. Now, little baby Albert, 1920, was 11 months old. He loved all animals. He loved his pet dog. He loved all the animals. He wasn't a scared baby. The only thing he was really scared about was loud noises. Now, what Watson and Rayner did, they did an experiment with him to see whether they could form a negative association in little Albert's mind towards things that he likes. Like, they used a white rat, they used a rabbit, they used Father Christmas mask and the family dog. Now, what they did was they initially gave him the white rat. He was like, oh, this is nice, isn't it? White rat. Yeah, I've had a play with a white rat. Lovely. Rabbit, dog, Santa Claus mask. Lovely. Filmed it all, documented it all. He loved that. Really nice. Okay. Then what they did was they had him without the animals, and they got a steel, this is the horrible bit, a steel bar,
yeah,
and a hammer, and they went behind his head and banged the steel bar with a hammer really loud, and he startled, and he started crying, and he was really fit, and so he was fearful of that noise. Now, what they did was they started to pair or associate the animals with the noise, and so they would give him the rat, then they would bang the steel bar behind him, give him the rat, bang the steel bar. So it's the rat and the noise were paired together. Okay, and they did that over and over again with breaks, but still, it's really unethical, horrible experiment. So what they did was they did that over and over again, and then they gave him a break. I think it was probably a couple of weeks, or maybe it was a week. I can't remember. They gave him a break. Then they just simply brought the white rat out. And guess what he did? He started crying because he now associates the white rat with that really loud bang. And the thing is that it happened with all the animals, happened with a rabbit, happened with some cotton wool, happened with a family dog, happened with the Father Christmas mask. He started to generalize that horrible experience with all of these other similar looking objects or animals. So when we're talking about using startle tactics like squirting water, a loud bang, clapping our hands, and for example, your other dog is there, or the cat walks past, or your husband walks in, your dog may well, your child may well start to associate that loud noise or that bang or that squirt of water with that other stimulus, that other person, that other dog, that other whoever walking in or is nearby or whatever. And that can cause serious, serious side effects and other behavior issues you do not want. So it's really not worth it.
No, it's not worth it. It's because it's the emotional association, isn't it?
Yeah, it happens to us all the time.
Makes me feel awful. Yeah.
Do you remember, there's this thing about, I see it on social media quite a lot, about people reminiscing when they used to be at school. And there was that horrible Sunday night feeling, and it was triggered by the Antiques Roadshow theme tune. The heartbeat theme tune or something. And people, you know, they don't watch Antiques Roadshow, they don't go to school anymore. But when they hear that Antiques Roadshow theme tune, they're like, oh, they have this horrible, dreaded feeling. And that's exactly the same as the Little Albert experiment.
A conditioned emotional response.
A negative conditioned emotional response. And it happens all the time. So just be very careful. This is why we're so against punishment, because things can go wrong very quickly, very easily.
Can do a lot of damage in a short amount of time.
Another thing is when dogs are reactive to other dogs on lead, or they you can actually make that worse or create an issue by every time your dog goes to strain to meet another dog, if you pull back and say no, or do some sort of punishment thing, your dog can then start to associate the other dog with that no or correction. And that can really exacerbate on-lead reactivity or even cause it. So it's something really important to be aware of.
When you're looking at those sorts of things, the dog's often reacting out of fear, isn't it? And then the dog already doesn't like this thing, and that's why it's reacting. So by you punishing the behavior of them barking, now it just doesn't like it even more. It might stop barking, but it hasn't changed the way it feels about that trigger. And then what can happen is you check out all of the warning signals, and eventually you'll end up with explosive aggression. Aren't you?
Yeah.
It's like, I can't bark in this situation because you tell me off. And you might think, oh, I'm fine. The dog's fine now because it doesn't bark anymore. But inside, it's not feeling great about it. And it can just escalate to something worse. So punishment is not the way to go. Oh, another thing that I want to say is there's actually is no need when it comes to chihuahuas and tiny dogs, there is no need to be using physical correction, verbal correction, startle technique. There's literally no need. Is there? Because they're such sensitive, too, intelligent dogs.
Yeah, there is no need anyway, because it's too risky. It is far too risky for something else to go wrong, or for some other behavior you don't want to crop up. It's not worth it.
You know, we need to, like I said before, we need to be building them up, not bringing them down.
Yeah. If you're 9, 10, if you're 9 or 10 inches tall, the last thing you want to be, is some person looming over you, telling you no, and chastising you for various things that you don't really know what's going on. We need to be increasing their confidence, boosting their confidence, building them up, backing them up around other people that want to touch them, other dogs coming over, like we said in our last episode, and really just, train them meet their needs and look after them. So the magic of teaching an alternative behavior, because it is magic, isn't it?
Yes.
We say alternative behavior, something else that you want your chihuahua to be doing. So for example, when I'm feeding them, preparing their food, they are sitting on a mat, the magical mat. There is magic in that, because now they just do it without me asking, because the visual kind of cue, the visual command or the cue is me getting their dog food out of the cupboard. Exactly. That means you've got to go and sit on a mat. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I think this is the reason that both of us felt like we didn't really have any rules, is because we've come to a place with our dogs now that we don't even really have to speak to them, because just the visual cues of what we're doing. Yeah, we just, like when I eat my dinner, they know to go and sit on their cushion, just because we've conditioned that over time. They just know, I'll go and sit on my cushion because she's eating.
Yeah. And I have a funny story about poo picking. So when I'm similar to Kate or in that sort of thing, when I walk the dogs and I need to bend down and pick up their poo, guess what Bo does? That's a cue for her to sit and look at me when I'm picking up the poo, and I'm tying up the poo bag and whatever, and she's sitting looking at me, because I've taught that, because before she was straining on the lead, wanting to go, here, can we go now, no, I've got to pick up this poo. So what I did is I taught her to sit nicely and look at me with food, you know, lots of treats, and now I'll just do it, and I'll be looking down without even asking her, without even looking at her, but I'll look down and she's there sitting up looking at me. And then when that final tie, I tie the bag like that, like, oh good, we can go, and I say, let's go, and when we go on, it's really good. It's like magic, really. It's very magical. Yes. teaching those little things, so useful. The other thing I do with Bo is she does sleep on my bed, but she sleeps at the foot of my bed on a human pillow with a blanket on it. I know, but she's not, the rule is she's not allowed on my pillow. I don't want her on my pillow. It's disgusting. So if she goes too far to the pillow at night while I'm getting into bed, and I'm like, oi, and well, I won't say oi, I'll just sort of like look at her pillow, and she'll go, oh, okay. And she'll just go to the pillow, or I'll put my hand out and she'll touch it, and she just knows that that's where she should be. And I'm sure a lot of you listeners are like this anyway. You've kind of got the unspoken kind of rules. But for us, we have a lot of these little things because we've trained for it. And the little visual cues mean something to the dog.
Yeah, and it's happened gradually over time, hasn't it? It's not just like we woke up one day and then the dogs just know everything that they're supposed to be doing. We've reinforced the behaviours that we like.
Yeah. So if you build a strong reinforcement history around certain behaviours, you're just going to get that strength.
Exactly.
That strong behaviour.
Dogs do what pays. Same with people. We both do what pays out, don't we? If something's worked in the past, we'll do it again, which is why you want to prevent behaviour you don't like, because if it's worked in the past, they'll do it again. But
yeah,
what behaviours you do like, carry on.
Yeah, I was just going to say, you want to make the behaviours that you want easy to obtain. And you want to make the behaviours you don't want very hard.
Differential reinforcement. Yeah, so you want the dog to think, what's paid out the best? I've done this that has paid out, but it wasn't really worth it. Well, sitting on my cushion has paid out the best. I'm going to do
that. Yeah, sitting on my cushion really pays me very well. Getting off it doesn't pay me at all. So what am I going to do? Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to sit on the cushion, aren't I?
Exactly.
I mean, when I taught my dog, when I taught the dogs, this is why Bo sits and looks at me and doesn't pull on the lead when I'm picking up dog poo and when I'm on a walk, because I've reinforced that heavily. Like, I started off, you know, by pulling out the poo bag ready to pick up the poo, drop some treats. Then I would bend down and pick up the poo, drop some treats. Then I would start to tie it, drop some treats, get more, drop some treats. And then tie it, eventually drop some treats. Now I don't need to do any of the treat stuff because she will sometimes get a treat when I've done the final tie, but we've built on that, you know. We don't start with the end. We start with the beginning. So I've built up that nice behaviour that I want very, very gradually.
Do you think she thought at the beginning, gosh, she's really clumsy. She's really clumsy every time she gets a poo like that.
It's just everywhere.
Gonna drop the food.
But I was very, very you know, I'm very careful where I place the food. So I wanted her in front of my feet or just to the side of my feet, not like over there or anything, but it wasn't like a whole big scatter. It was like a placed some food but my feet, and that's exactly where I want her to be. So the food to live, where you put the food as well, is really, really important. So anyway, that's another topic.
Yes, reward placement is another topic.
Reward placement.
I was just thinking, so if our listeners are listening, which they will be doing because otherwise it won't be our listeners, and they're thinking what should I do when my dog does something that I don't want them to be doing?
You're asking me?
I'm asking you.
First of all, can you prevent it? Can you, for example, should we use the example of them barking at dinner time?
Yeah.
Can you pop them behind a baby gate or somewhere else? Then I would probably, if not, or you don't want to do that, or they're still barking or whatever, then I would probably just start reinforcing what I would do want them to do. So I'd have the bed in the kitchen or the utility room, wherever you're feeding them. And I probably would drop a couple of treats in that bed or that mat. So they go to the mat. Then I do a little bit more preparing dinner, drop some more food over to the mat. A little bit more, drop some more food onto the mat. So they know where the food's going to be while you're preparing dinner. Is that what you would do?
Yeah, that's what I would do.
Rather than teaching a mat separately, because that's a whole different thing. But that's what I would do if it was somebody asking me, how do I calm my dogs down when I'm preparing their tea?
How do I stop them doing stuff I don't want them to be doing?
Reward where you want them to be.
Yeah, reward what you
on
like
that mat. And more than likely, most dogs, if they see a treat become available, they'll usually sit. So they'll probably at some stage will be feeding the mat while you're preparing their dinner, and then they'll probably at some stage sit, and then you start feeding the sit. You start rewarding that sit and the nice calmer behavior. So you fade out the treats. Eventually you'll be able to prepare the dinner, and they'll probably just sit on the mat waiting for a treat or waiting for their dinner to be finished. Then they can have it.
Easy
in principle.
Yes, reward what you like. And I feel like a lot, it's so easy, isn't it, to miss an opportunity to reward what you like.
Yeah,
because when they're doing what you want them to do, you don't always think to reinforce that behavior.
I think what it is we've trained our minds, we're so used to it, we've kind of trained our minds to look for the good behavior, you know, the wanted behavior, the desirable behavior. And for many owners, they're just not trained in that, so you have to switch that on.
Probably everybody's a bit guilty of doing that, aren't they, lapsing things, because when they do it really well, you just, oh, we do it well now, so I'm gonna, that might not pay you so much for doing that. But
and a lot of people, once it's sort of trained, as it were, they stop the rewards, which is, you know, some things you can,
Yeah.
But it is a good, like you say, it's a good idea to top it up sometimes.
Well, you've seen Chloe get in the car, haven't you, now? She's like throws herself at you.
Yeah.
She throws herself up your leg now, because she used to actually not like getting in the car at all. If she knew it was time to get in the car, she would leave.
Oh, really?
Yeah, at one point. Oh, okay. She was like, I do not like getting in the car. Now she like throws herself up your leg, is like, please put me in the car.
It's because of that magic beef you keep cooking. Yeah. Kate, Kate came down for a couple of weeks, a few weeks ago, to stay in the area, because you wanted to come for a little holiday, didn't you?
Yeah.
And I was with Kate for a day or so, and she walked into where she was staying, and I thought, oh, this is nice. Have you cooked a roast? I could smell a roast. And she goes, yeah, it's for the dogs. I mean, I would do the same. I would do the same. But it was a whole roast beef. For the dogs, it's for like their car training and stuff. So just a reminder to use the good stuff, use the good, good food. My dogs enjoyed it as well, because we had some leftover beef.
Yeah, there was a lot of beef. I also had some beef.
Yeah,
everybody had beef.
It wasn't all for the dogs.
But it was very good for car training and general training. Recall training. Is that outside?
Oh, beef? Recall training, amazing. Yeah. Outside beef. That's right.
Outside beef.
Magic beef.
There you go. How to set house rules with kindness. Prevent the behaviour, manage the behaviour, teach them an alternative behaviour.
Redirect and interrupt.
Yeah, redirect and interrupt the behaviour. And let them know when they're doing a great job, when they do stuff that you like, which they will be doing all the time, reinforce that behaviour, reward the things you like, and you'll build more of that behaviour.
Definitely.
We don't need to resort to punishment with our chihuahuas.
As I said it before, what gets rewarded is repeated.
Exactly.
So keep that in mind.
Yes. And that's how you set house rules for your chihuahua.
Yes. If you'd like to join the conversation, please reach out to us to the Chihuahua Podcast Facebook page.
Yes, please do. We have had some people reach out to us about It's Okay, He's Friendly. So if you haven't listened to that episode, please do go back and listen to it. Wherever you're listening to the podcast, please remember to leave us a 5-star review. Share the podcast. If you really want to support the show, listen to the podcast twice on different platforms, because that really helps our rating.
Oh, cheeky.
Listen to it twice and tell your friends. And make them listen to it twice as well.
Very cheeky.
If you have any questions, you know where to find us, the Chihuahua Podcast on Facebook, and we'll see you next time.
Yes, and we actually have a special guest next time as well. We can't tell you much more about the nap. No, start again, Hayley. not that one. We have a special guest coming on next episode. Very, very exciting. And that's all we're going to say at the moment. And
we've got lots of exciting
guests.
We can't talk about it.
No, we've got secrets.
So stay tuned if you want to know our secrets.
Very exciting. But yeah, next guest is going to be amazing, and hopefully you'll enjoy it, but we'll see you next time.